Hey, come on, I said move your car.
There, how's that?
You didn't even budge. Move.
Okay, there.
Move your f***ing car.
Oh, more? How about that?
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
The views and opinions expressed on the following pre-recorded show do not necessarily represent those of WHFR or Henry Ford College. Good afternoon. You're listening to the show called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. Today, my special guest is Dr. Eva Grosbeck. She's a licensed veterinarian who is certified in acupuncture and Chinese herbal medicine for pets. She also has a consultation practice and sees pet patients in the Tri-County area. Dr. Grosbeck, thank you for being here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Do you mind if I call you Eva?
No, it's fine.
Okay, great. Well, Eva, I met you at an event in Livonia. It was at a Unity Church. They had a holistic fair, in essence. And I thought it was very interesting because I see that you do acupuncture for animals. How did you get started there?
Yeah. Well, it's been kind of a long, interesting journey. I've always been interested in acupuncture for a long time, really. I was practicing as a veterinarian for about 5 years before I pursued the acupuncture training. But I was always interested in it. I always found it kind of fascinating, a different system of medicine and a different way to approach patients. And then when I practiced general medicine for about 5 years and became frustrated with some of the limitations that you just find in conventional medicine. There's a lot of chronic conditions that persist despite prescribing medications or doing things like prescription diets or, you know, even surgical procedures. And so at that point, I kind of thought, all right, I want to see what other options are out there. And that's when I kind of took the leap to proceed with going through with the training and kind of opening that door into Chinese medicine for myself.
Mm-hmm. So you use traditional therapies and medicine initially, and then thought that there's got to be something more that can help the animals?
Right, exactly. So, yeah, I think that most veterinarians, probably most medical professionals in general, oftentimes find that, you know, when you've been practicing long enough, you start to realize that there are some really complicated disease processes and some very patients that are, you know, suffering with longstanding illness. And so you put a lot of your heart and soul into trying to help these patients from, you know, alleviating their symptoms and suffering. And, you know, you do find that there's a certain ceiling effect, you know, that you can find with Western medicine. So while it's very appropriate for a lot of conditions and a lot of situations, it doesn't treat everything. And so some patients need the combination of Eastern and Western medicine. And some just do a lot better with, you know, with Eastern medicine alone because they've tried everything else. So yeah, exactly. You know, I kind of consider it like another tool in the toolbox. So, you know, you've got all of these things that you can choose from, but it's nice to have an entirely different system of medicine where you can say, all right, well, we've tried X, Y, and Z, and that's not working. And that's how a lot of my patients end up with me because, you know, a lot of times they've gone the conventional route. They've tried a lot of things. Or maybe, you know, they've had surgical procedures and, you know, they've never fully recovered from them or they've got, you know, chronic pain associated with them. So there are, you know, people out there who are looking for alternatives. And so for me, that's kind of how it led me to the path, just knowing that there had to be other approaches, you know, that, and I'm the type of person that, you know, for me, surgery is always a last option. You know, I want to exhaust everything I can, both with myself and my patients. You know, I'm a more, a less is more type of practitioner. And so if I can help in a way that's not causing side effects or harm or major discomfort or other problems, that's my kind of go-to solution. So that's another way that it was appealing for me as a practitioner.
Right. I don't think there's any such thing as a minor surgery. I mean, anytime anytime you're opening up a body, you know, animal, human, whatever, there's pain and, like you say, discomfort, and who knows what might happen, you know.
Absolutely.
So,
risk of infection, right. And exactly. They don't always work, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, unfortunately, sometimes you can have a surgical procedure, but you don't have the outcome that you would like, and then you're kind of still left like, all right, what do I do now?
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So is that difficult to learn? I mean, for animals using acupuncture?
It's difficult to learn, I would say, on a number of different levels. The first thing that's difficult for people is that, you know, the programs are intended for working professionals, you know. So most of the people who pursue it are have full-time jobs, you know, or practices that they own or whatever. And so typically you have to travel and go at a distance. So there's a lot of logistics to it as far as being able to get away from work and make all that work. And then once you get over all of that, get acclimated to that, it is interesting in that, yeah, because really it's a completely different system of medicine. And so, you know, you walk in expecting everything's going to be the way that you're used to it, and you have to learn, it's like learning a completely different language. And so it's funny because I've, since I've been certified, I've partnered up with the group that I did my certification with, just in terms of doing some work for them, doing some teaching with them and some training, some mentorships for veterinarians who are learning this. And it's funny to watch them go through the process of where I was, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, you know, trying to figure out, like, how does all this work? Because it's really a lot of information. So not only do you have to learn where all these points are anatomically, but then you have to try to understand the philosophy of Chinese medicine and how this is helpful for patients. And so, you know, you learn about it from a Western medical perspective, but then in most of the courses, they want you to, you know, kind of get your feet wet with understanding the Chinese medical philosophy behind it. So, you're learning Chinese terms, and you're learning a completely different system of evaluating health and illness. And so, yeah, it's a lot to wrap your mind around. I think most people find that it's a lot more than what they thought they were getting into. I think a lot of them just thought, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to do this. And then they realize, like, holy cow, like, this is a lot of information I have to assimilate. It's a big commitment.
Right. So were you surprised at, you know, what you had to learn?
I was. Yeah, mm-hmm. I was. Yeah. And especially the program that I took, you know, the program that I took essentially is pretty comprehensive in that their goal is to teach veterinarians about what we understand about acupuncture from a more Western scientific perspective, but then they also want you to start to understand Chinese medical philosophy. So you're really learning these complete dualistic views of health and the explanation for how these things work. And so it's a little interesting from that perspective. And they're very serious about it. So, you know, you have to learn a lot of information in a pretty short period of time and then be able to, you know, try to go home and start to integrate that and practice it. And so, it's, you know, for me, I was surprised. And most of the students, you know, have an overwhelm point during their experience where they're just kind of like, oh my gosh, like, this is way more than I had intended or really understood I would be expected to do. But I think everybody who goes through it is happy that they did it. But yeah, it's a little bit more than what I had originally bargained for. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, how is the testing done? Is it actually hands-on, or is it written testing? Is it both? What?
It's both. So the way that the program works is and I should preface that by saying there are three main schools that provide certification training for acupuncture, veterinary acupuncturists. My training and affiliation is with a group called IVIS. It's the International Veterinary Acupuncture Society. So they're the oldest certifying body in the country, and they have graduates all over the world. And when I did my training, there were people there from Costa Rica, from Germany, from Switzerland. So people are there, you know, veterinarians from all over to train there. And then there's also another facility called the Qi Institute in Florida. And then Colorado State has what's called the medical acupuncture certification. And their program is different because they don't teach you Chinese medicine. They just teach medical application. So theirs is quite different. So I'll speak for IVIS. But with IVIS, you enroll and you go through the course of study. It's very interesting because there are not a lot of barometers to guide your progress. Essentially, you commit to the program, you go, you attend all of the courses, you attend all the labs, all the lectures, and then at the end is when your testing is. And so there's a written test, which is about a 4-hour, I think it's some like 300 plus question exam that you have to sit for. It's a big deal.
Yeah, no, it is.
And then you have to have a practical exam. So the practical exam, I'm certified in dogs and horses. So the practical exam I had to take canine practicum and then an equine practicum. And so with that, you go in and they give you a card of points and you have to identify them and show them and enough to prove your proficiency. And then they also require an internship. So I had to do a 40-hour internship under a licensed veterinary acupuncturist. And then you actually have to submit 2 case reports for review. And so they'll look at those and decide, you know, so they really want to know that you know what you're doing before you start going out there and treating patients.
Right. And
that's one of the differences between a certified acupuncturist. So it varies by the state, but in Michigan, acupuncture is considered a form of surgery, actually. And that being said, it should only be done by a licensed veterinarian. But you don't have to be a certified acupuncturist to do acupuncture. You could just be a veterinarian who took like a weekend course and thought, maybe I'll try, you know, a couple points. So that is something that I do like to try to communicate to people, that somebody who's a certified acupuncturist, they've gone through a lot of training to understand and to be proficient. So that's something I always encourage people to do, is make sure that the person that they're working with is a certified acupuncturist, because there can be differences. So technically, you know, it should be a veterinarian and ideally one who's a certified veterinary acupuncturist.
Mm-hmm. And briefly, I just want to remind everybody that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And you're listening to the program called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. This month, my special guest is Dr. Eva Grossbeck. She is a licensed veterinarian who is certified in acupuncture and Chinese herbal medicine for pets. She also has a consultation practice and sees pet patients in the Tri-County area. And right now we're talking about acupuncture. That really sounds intensive from what you went through, so it's good to know. Now, is it considered surgery because you're actually inserting something into an animal?
Correct. Yeah. Yep. Exactly. So generally speaking, acupuncture is a pretty safe procedure. There's not a lot of side effects associated with it. But because you are inserting needles into the body, obviously there's a certain amount of clean technique. It's not necessarily sterile, but certainly a clean procedure. So you need to be trained in keeping things aseptic. But then also, you know, because acupuncture points are located all over the body, you know, you need to know your anatomy. And so because of those two reasons, so for instance, you know, somebody, a canine massage therapist could do acupressure. They can't call themselves an acupuncturist, but they might use acupressure as part of their therapy because they're not inserting anything into the tissues where they could cause damage. They're just using manual pressure externally. And so that's exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly the reason.
Mm-hmm. So when you do this, how do you determine what one of your patients needs? I mean, obviously they can't talk to you, but I mean, if you see a pet walking with a limp or whatever, mm-hmm. do you kind of know what area is probably bothering the pet in mm-hmm. question?
Yeah. So typically, so for me, the way I practice is that if somebody wants to work with me, if they're interested in, you know, figuring out if these type of therapies would be useful for their pets, I have them schedule a consultation with me. And so a lot of times animals come in and sometimes they have like really extensive histories. I mean, I've had people come in with, you know, medical records like this because they've been all over the place. And so sometimes I know exactly what's going on. in, and because we already have a diagnosis, you know, then I know what type of therapies are going to be the best choice for that patient. Now, if they come to me and they haven't been worked, their issue hasn't been worked up by another veterinarian or another clinic, you know, I always do my own exam and physical. I take really extensive histories with people. Their visits with me are very different. They're typically like 60 to 90 minute visits. And you know, so I do a full Western exam of their pet and then an Eastern exam, but I'm very hands-on. So like for me, I'm also trained in some more I'm not a rehabilitation specialist, but I'm trained in some techniques, osteopathic manual therapy, some palpation techniques that I've learned through Chinese medicine. And that actually really helps me too, to kind of localize pain and discomfort and where an animal has an issue, because sometimes they might exhibit symptoms in one area, but I actually find it's another part of the body that's the origin of the problem.
Right. Yeah. And you have to work on the other part to solve the problem.
Correct.
Now, what's the difference between, you said you do a Western examination and Eastern. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between the two?
Yeah. So your Western exam is very what I call systems oriented. So you're going through all the major body systems. So I'm sure all medical practitioners in their head have kind of a checklist, like, okay, I have to listen to the heart and I have to palpate the belly and I've got to look at the eyes and the ears and the teeth. But a lot of times you actually are not really hands-on with that patient. So the Chinese medical exam is a lot about, because you have to kind of keep in mind, you know, when Chinese medicine was in its inception, they had no diagnostic equipment at all. So they really had to rely on their five senses. And that's what the Chinese medical exam really relies on. So you're using your eyes and your ears, you know, your sense of smell. So for me, I do a real hands-on exam to kind of palpate the actual meridians, which are the acupuncture channels, to see if there are areas where there are signs of like discomfort or problems. The other two big areas that are different in Chinese medicine are the tongue analysis and pulse analysis. So you actually look at, and they do this for humans too, at the patient's tongue, and that gives you information about their overall health. And then you also do a pulse analysis, where usually we use the pulse on the inside of the thighs for dogs and cats. And you know, you learn to identify pulse patterns, which have significance in Chinese medicine. And so it is a different type of exam. It's a lot more focusing, it's a lot more holistic exam, because you're focusing more on the global nature of this individual patient than really breaking them down into a system of body parts.
Mm-hmm. And what was that? Was it palpate the belly, or what?
Palpate, like push
palpate.
On.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
See if something feels funky in there.
Yeah, I didn't know, you know, palpate, what is that? Okay.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
That's new for me.
That's
anyway.
A new for you. Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay, now we know.
Yep.
Okay, so what do you, what do you pay attention to most, the Western or the Eastern diagnosis?
Well, I pay attention to both, but because people, you know, people who seek out my services are wanting either a more natural approach, or they want to combine a more natural approach with a conventional approach. So I have to pay attention to both, but my main goal is to try to explain how this patient got to the state that they're in, what I call through the lens of Chinese medicine. So I'm trying to put that puzzle together of how we started here and ended up here. And I know that these are the medications we've used, and these are the test results that we've had in our past and whatnot, but I'm trying to find the root of the problem. And the only way I really feel like I can find the root of a problem is utilizing the techniques of Chinese medicine, because a lot of times what Western medicine is more about is controlling symptoms and kind of putting out fires. So, you know, you have an infection, so you go on antibiotics and you put out that fire, but maybe 3 months later, there's another infection, or there's a problem in another part of the body, or now we've got a swollen joint, or we've got arthritis, or we've developed cancer, or whatever. From a Chinese medical perspective, all of those things are related. They're just kind of branches of the same root problem. problem. So from my perspective, I try to kind of look at all of the things that are going on with a patient as, you know, kind of, okay, there's a one root that's responsible for this, and then we've got all these different branches, and the more complicated the cases, the more branches there are. So I try to identify that so that I can kind of start pruning away at those branches so that we can get to the root and hopefully help that patient to be healthier than maybe they've been in the past because we weren't looking at it from that perspective.
Right. Well, it sounds very holistic. I mean, you know, pruning and getting to the root and all that good stuff.
Right.
You know, sounds very good. Now, have you started to work on other animals, cats and others than just horses and dogs?
Yes. I treat cats as well. And there's not, it's interesting. So the way the certification is, and I don't think a lot of people necessarily know this, but it's like this in conventional veterinary training too. But because there's so many species of animals that veterinarians have to learn about, a lot of times things are broken down into kind of your more dog, cat, small animal model, and then your more like horse, cow, goat, like large animal model. And so when you learn acupuncture, you learn it using the dog as kind of the prototype, but you extrapolate all that information because the anatomy is pretty similar onto a cat and what have you. Now, interestingly enough, there are charts and things that are now being put together to be used in more exotic types of species. So some of the really advanced acupuncturists that I've studied under, I know that they've, you know, a lot of them actually travel to zoos. I know some of them have treated dolphins, they've treated elephants, they've treated snakes, like big, huge, you know, boa constrictors and things. So they're really, the applications of it are limitless. It's just a matter of getting comfortable with working with different species. For me, I primarily work with dogs and cats. I also do some work with rabbits. I was kind of a fan of rabbits my whole life. So I like working with them, and I've done some acupuncture cases, and they respond pretty nicely. And then some work with horses as well. That's kind of where my area is right now. But, you know, one of the nice things is just being able to learn new things as time goes on. And the thing that's nice about acupuncture is it never changes. It's over 3,000 years old. It's not going to change. So you just get better the more you do it and learn different techniques and work with different practitioners. So, like, yeah, my dream would be to work on an elephant or to do something really cool.
Really?
I mean, that would be amazing.
Yeah, a gorilla maybe.
Yeah,
or something,
right?
Something
you never
exotic.
Know.
Yes,
yeah,
a
it's
tiger.
Kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, what about, I mean, even birds and things like that?
Yeah, I have not forayed into working on birds yet, but it is a thing. You know, people, there are definitely people who do it. I know of a few practitioners who have done a lot of work with like rehabilitation with wildlife. So working on things like owls and hawks, some of these animals who come in injured, and they're so reliant on their vision. And I know a lot of them, when they're have had damage to their eyes, have done acupuncture around the eyes. They've seen some really nice results with that. So yeah, that, like I said, that, you know, the applications are really limitless, and it's kind of cool to be able to work on a species like that and be able to see them, you know, improve to the point that they can be released and go on to live, you know, their natural life.
Mm-hmm. And again, I just want to remind everybody that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This show is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest this month, Dr. Eva Grosbeck. She is a licensed veterinarian who is certified in acupuncture and Chinese herbal medicine for pets. She also has a consultation practice and sees pet patients in the Tri-County area. Now, when you work on these really big exotic animals, do they have to be put to sleep or sedated somehow before you can do that? They're just saying, you just can't approach them, obviously.
Oftentimes, yeah. I think sometimes it depends on the area that needs to be treated. So my understanding, and I don't have an extensive amount of experience with zoo animals, but I did do a rotation in vet school where we went out to some zoos and saw how the animals are worked with and did a little work with them ourselves, which was really cool experience. But, you know, a lot of the zookeepers are pretty amazing in being able to, and even just for regular veterinary services, you know, that these animals need as part of their regular healthcare. But they train these animals to be quite quite responsive to cooperate. So like a lot of times, you know, they'll have them distracted in some way. And then, you know, the animal is taught to kind of allow its leg to be extended, you know, for things like blood draws, or, you know, they need to file their nails or do some type of something. And so if it's just like one focal area that needs to be treated, I think, you know, you might be able to get away with doing some acupuncture without. But I know, like, if it's a complicated case, like, you know, I've seen some video of some tigers getting acupuncture, and they're usually, yeah, like those types of animals will probably be sedated ahead of time.
Right.
And then the person would just come in and do the needling, and then, you know, they'd remove the needles and then reverse the anesthesia. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, how can you tell it actually helps an animal, just simply by observation, or how does that work?
Yeah, yeah. Typically, well, it's interesting because, you know, some people will argue that, you know, in animals, you're not going to get a placebo effect like you would with people, you know, where sometimes we, you know, have a therapy done, or we do something ourselves and we've just kind of convinced ourselves that we feel better. Maybe we just naturally feel better. We attribute it to the therapy. So you don't, you know, really get that with animals, which is nice. But, you know, sometimes I try to be objective about it because, I mean, I've definitely seen situations where some owners may overemphasize the effects of the acupuncture and some might underemphasize. So I try to kind of stay neutral and kind of detach myself from the situation. And I try to subjectively reevaluate them every time that they come in. And so in some instances, it's super clear cut. I mean, one of the more common applications of acupuncture is for animals who have what's called intervertebral disc disease, which is a condition where there is an issue with the discs that are located in the back, in the spine, in between the vertebrae, and those can actually bulge or rupture, and it can cause paralysis. So that animal goes from being able to walk and be fine to paralyzed. And typically the paralysis affects the back end. So usually their front legs work pretty well, but their back legs don't. It's a really common condition in dachshunds and long-backed kind of dogs. And, you know, a lot of times surgery is recommended, which, if you can afford that and it's an option for you, that's a good thing. But not everybody can. So the other thing is, you know, surgery is most successful within a short window after the initial injury. And so the more time goes on, the less likely it is that the surgery is going to have, a 100% beautiful full return to function. So sometimes that influences people's decision too about whether or not they want to commit to that. Sometimes the age of the animal too, you know, sometimes if it happens in a 10-year-old dog, that person might not be able to afford $10,000 for surgery and an MRI or whatever. So, you know, a lot of those patients end up getting acupuncture, and that's one condition where there's no doubt that it's helping. I mean, I've had, you know, at least a half a dozen, maybe more, animals who came to me completely paralyzed in their back end. So unable to walk. Oftentimes they've been incontinent and can't control their bladder or their stools. And through a course of acupuncture treatment, usually what's called electroacupuncture, those animals have returned to being able to walk, being able to control their continence, and really being able to return to function for most, you know, for all intents and purposes. And so that's a situation where it's very clear cut that the acupuncture is helping these animals, you know, and there's definitely a body of research to show that acupuncture is a viable option for animals with that condition as a potentially an alternative to surgery. Mobility is a big reason that people seek out acupuncture. So, you know, your older arthritic pets. So people are just noticing, like, he's happier. He's walking better. We can take him on walks now. You know, he's not, he doesn't need as much of his pain medication, or maybe we were able to take him off of it. For animals with things like skin conditions or digestive disorders or whatever, you know, we're seeing a decrease in the frequency of the symptoms. So, you know, less vomiting or less, you know, issues with skin infections or itching. So really it's observing. It's just like you would do with anything. You know, I mean, if I prescribed a course of steroids and antibiotics and saw them back at a recheck, you know, if all their symptoms were under control and the owner was happy and the pet was happy, I'm like, all right, it's working. It's good. But it's the same thing with the alternative medicine. You know, it's really about, making a Chinese medical diagnosis, prescribing a course of treatment, and then reevaluating that patient to see. And it's like anything, you know, one of the things that kind of is frustrating to me as a practitioner is that a lot of times people have, they're a lot harder on complementary and alternative therapies than they are of conventional therapies. So it's like, if something doesn't work, or it doesn't work as quickly as someone would like, people are real quick to say, oh, well, it doesn't work because it's a bunch of hoopla. But, you know, it's not really a fair lens that sometimes people are judging these forms of treatment, because there's no treatment. There is not a surgical procedure. There's not an antibiotic. There is not, you know, a pain medication that is 100% effective in every patient all the time. And so I always let my clients know, you know, acupuncture is like that too. There are certain patients that are what they call non-responders. So no matter how good your acupuncture treatment is, it just might not be the right therapy for them. And that's okay, because there's no one therapy that's 100% curative,
right,
you know?
Right.
I mean, I have personally suffered with chronic pain for the past couple of years, and I've used a lot of different therapies, and I found, for me, it's a certain combination of therapies that gives me relief. And that's not uncommon for animals either, and that's okay, you know? It's like everything is playing its role.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like every little bit helps.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would imagine, too, the pet owners probably have their biases in that they just automatically assume that, like you say, you know, that Eastern stuff is just a bunch of mumbo jumbo and it doesn't really do anything, and they just want Western, you know, medicine or, you know, treatment done to their pets, and that's it.
Right.
Have you run into that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Probably what I run into more of, because I'm kind of outside of the world of conventional medicine, when I still had a, you know, type of daily job where I was in like a fully functional Western clinic all the time, I would say I ran into that more than I do now, because now people kind of seek me out because I'm different. But sometimes it is funny, because you will see differing opinions oftentimes between couples, you know, like that's a common thing.
Yeah,
where
right, yeah.
So the husband's maybe a little, oftentimes the husband is a little more speculative and kind of like, man, do we really want to do this? And then a lot of times, you know, the wife's like, yeah, we're trying it. Acupuncture worked great for me, you know. So
right.
Yeah, sometimes there are kind of dueling forces there. Yeah, so there's a lot of, you know, I just try to let people know that, you know, it's a viable thing to try. You know, I suggest to people, depending on the condition, I'll say, all right, I recommend you try this many treatments at this interval, and then we'll reassess and see where we're at. And if it's helping them and they're doing well, then beautiful, then they continue with the course of treatment. If it's not helpful for a patient, or if it's too stressful for them, because there are some patients who just get really stressed by the handling of acupuncture.
Mm-hmm.
And in those cases, unless it's a real benefit to them in some way, I usually don't recommend that people, you know, continue to pursue it, because it shouldn't be anything that's, you know, overly traumatic or stressful for the animal. So there are some situations where people might come to me wanting acupuncture, and I tell them, like, I don't think it's really the best option for your pet. So, you know, I'm pretty straightforward with people about, you know, this is my experience, this is, you know, what I anticipate is going to happen. I think it's an option for your pet. I don't think it's an option for your pet. Or sometimes I'm like, okay, this is what I think, but let's try it and see what happens. You know, so I'm very transparent about expectations and being realistic too, because, you know, the effects of acupuncture are cumulative. It's, you know, I always tell people, like, you know, it's not a magical wand, you know? So like sometimes people think, you know, you're going to put those needles in, you're going to take them out, and a 15-year-old dog,
yeah, right,
who hasn't,
yeah,
walked in 6 months is going to run around.
Right,
yeah. I always tell people, you know, it's not a tie. I don't have a time machine. I don't have a magical wand. But there are, you know, these therapies can be beneficial, but the effects are cumulative. So it's super uncommon to do one treatment and everything's, you know, great. I mean, typically you need to invest in, for most conditions, I'd say somewhere in between 4 to 6 treatments before you're even going to be able to really fully assess, you know, where we're at. But I would say a minimum of 3 for every condition, because it's just, that's just the way that it works. I mean, more natural and holistic practices, they take a little bit longer in order to exert changes in the body, because they're not as aggressive, you know.
Right.
So that's one of the things that people have to keep in mind too. You know, I have to try to remind people, like, this this problem didn't start overnight and it's not going to get fixed overnight. It takes a little bit of time. But, you know, most of the time it's worth the investment of exploring it, especially if people are, you know, if they've tried a lot of other options and they just haven't gotten the results that they've wanted and they're, you know, looking for something else.
Mm-hmm. Have you worked with certain pets for maybe a year or two or three ongoing and eventually it does kick in somewhere along the line where it really does? I mean, you can see a difference anyway.
Oh, yeah, for sure. One of the stories I like to tell is the first acupuncture patient I ever had, which was when I was still doing my training, and a veterinary friend of mine who's a veterinarian referred this dog to me, and he was very skeptical about acupuncture and kind of like, well, you know, he's like, nothing that we're going to do is going to help this dog, so you can't really mess it up, so here you go. And it was...
Yeah, that's pretty positive. Yeah, you can't mess it up too much.
Exactly. Yeah. That shows you the perspective under which he was operating. But so anyway, this was a dachshund, like I was speaking about before, who had a very advanced disc disease, intervertebral disc disease. And so this dog was completely paralyzed. And she was a young dog. She was like, I think looking back, I want to say she was like three, maybe a little younger. So, you know, here's this poor woman, very nice woman. She has two dachshunds that are sisters. They're young dogs. And now one of them is paralyzed all of a sudden. And they couldn't afford to have the surgery done. And I thought, I'll try. You know, I don't know. You know, we'll see. And, so we started doing treatment, and in the beginning we did it weekly, and I was doing house call visits for her, so I got to know her and her dogs very well, and we kind of went through this whole process together, and, you know, I just, like, you know, kept plugging away, you know, and so... At first, I was like, I don't know what to expect, you know? So we got a few treatments in, and it was little things at first. And that's how healing works, you know? So the first thing that happened is she was able to wag her tail. She couldn't, her tail was paralyzed initially. And so one day she started wagging her tail, and her owner called me and was like, you know, she wagged her tail, you know, it's like so great. And I'm like, all right, well, that's one step. Okay, so we'll keep going. So we kept going. And as we went through, you know, by the end, long story short, you know, she was able to stand and then started to walk and then, you know, had a really very nice return to function for an animal who was as in bad of shape as she was. But it took about 12 to 16 weeks to get there for her. And I think if I had not been so green, I probably wouldn't have kept going. I probably would have been like, I was like, I did four treatments and it didn't work. What do I do now? You know? So in that case, it was kind of the persistence of just wanting to see what would happen. But if we would have stopped, you know, after three treatments,
right,
she would have probably euthanized her dog. And so, you know, it's those types of things where it's like sometimes you got to push yourself through it. And I've seen a few animals that I've worked with that I've helped them for one condition. And then, you know, we're doing maintenance therapy for them. And then something else happens. And then we start a whole nother process. And so, yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, I oftentimes, you know, I have some patients that I've been working with for, you know, 3-4 years. And, you know, just kind of helping them continue to stay well. And if new things pop up, you know, usually I'm getting a call like, hey, something else is going on. You know, what do you think about this? But so absolutely.
So you just have to have patience with your patients, right?
Correct.
Something like that. Yeah.
And with yourself.
Yeah, right. Well, I would imagine, though, that you're probably pleasantly surprised many a time when you keep at it. And like you said, maybe you thought that, well, what's the use? But you keep on. And haven't you surprised yourself as well as the pet and the pet owner?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, more times than not, most of the time, at least in my experience, you know, most people are pleasantly surprised. You know, a lot of people, it's not uncommon for people to come in who maybe don't have a lot of experience with this type of medicine or these types of therapies. So a lot of times they're just not really sure, you know, they're like, well, I want to believe all the stuff you're saying to me, but I mean, I don't know, you know? And so it's funny, it's not uncommon for people to come in and say, you know, yeah, I mean, I was talking to my husband and we're like, I think this is actually working. Like, do you think it's working? And he's like, yeah, I think it's working. So it's funny, sometimes people have to like allow themselves to admit that, you know, like that they're seeing improvements and that there's more to it than, you know, so.
Right. Well, it's probably an eye-opening experience for everybody all the way around.
Right.
What kind of herbal medicine do you use with the pets?
Yeah. So my training is in Chinese herbal medicine. So Chinese herbal medicine is different than other forms of herbal medicine. So in America, we're very used to what's been termed kind of Western herbal medicine, which is using plants that are indigenous to our culture, right? Indigenous to our area. So that in and of itself makes a difference as to what's available. So we're definitely going to find different types of plants in North America than we are going to in China. And then Western herbal medicine, oftentimes, single herbs are often used therapeutically, like alone instead of in combination. So Chinese herbal medicine is a very specific type of herbal medicine. I should probably preface it by saying that there's five branches of Chinese medicine. So acupuncture is a branch of Chinese medicine. Herbal therapies are a branch of Chinese medicine. Food therapy is another. Exercise. So usually with them, it's like Tai Chi and Qigong. And then massage. They actually believe in body work. And there's a form of massage called Tui Na, which is specifically partnered with acupuncture and Chinese medicine. And so that's the medical, you know, the kind of indigenous medical culture of China, you know, what they would be working with. And so Chinese herbal medicine, there are formulas. And so it's really uncommon for them to use a single herb. So what they did is over like literally thousands of years through experience with working with herbs and through oral traditions and fine tuning these things, they figured out what worked and what didn't work. And if I combine this, it actually works better. And if I add a little bit of this, then I get fewer side effects. And so there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of formulas that are all composed of varying numbers of individual herbs. And you prescribe those herbs based on the Chinese medical diagnosis. So like in North America, we might say, okay, well, you have allergies, you know, maybe you need to take some nettles because that's an herbal antihistamine. And it would just be one single herb that you would take to control a symptom. The Chinese herbal medicine is a lot more complicated because you have to have a Chinese medical diagnosis before you can actually prescribe, because you're treating based more on that than you are a Western medical diagnosis. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I always find interesting and very complex about Chinese medicine is that, you know, you could have 10 dogs or 10 people with the same Western medical diagnosis, and you could have 10 people with high cholesterol or whatever. And what you will find is that the Chinese medical diagnosis for all of those people is likely going to be different. So they would actually have different herbs prescribed in their therapy. So the long of the short of it is that the therapies of Chinese medicine are very individualized. So no two people and no two pets are going to have the same therapy, because they're not going to have the same exact pattern. So, and that's one of the things that's nice about it, because, you know, you're not necessarily doing like cookie cutter type of prescriptions and stuff. You know, there's a real thoughtfulness to it.
Right. Well, it seems like there's a lot to know about and a lot to remember. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I'm sure you probably don't want to mix certain herbal medicines together too. Does that play a part? I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
You have to be aware of that.
Yeah, you do. Largely, most of the herbal formulas are pretty safe, but yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, herbs, my philosophy is that herbs are the most similar to pharmaceuticals than any other really type of alternative medicine option, like homeopathics or whatever. So herbs are very, you know, medicinal and pharmaceutical in how they work, to the point that a lot of drugs have been developed based on understanding that this plant does this. And so they go into the lab and they create a synthetic form and they, you know, patent it, and then it becomes like a thing. But you know, you're absolutely right. There are certainly dangers of working with herbs. And so, like, for me, I studied herbal medicine under a certifying body for veterinarians. It's called the CIVT, College of Veterinary Integrative Therapies. And so that actually, so I have, they changed the designation of it recently, but it's essentially like a graduate degree in Chinese veterinary herbal medicine. So I spent a big chunk of time studying herbs so that they can be prescribed safely. So like part of my training was understanding where do you get safe herbs, you know, because you have to think about those things, you know. All of the supplements out there, and in America, herbs fall into that category. You know, they're not regulated by the FDA.
Right.
So we're relying on companies to provide us with high quality products that are safe, that are not adulterated, that don't have any harmful things in them. And so there's a lot of safety things that you have to think about when you're using and prescribing herbs. So, you know, you need to know, where are these herbs coming from? Are they coming from areas, you know, where are we protecting, you know, biodiversity? We're not, you know, using anything that was, you know, has a shark fin in it or a rhinoceros horn or something awful like that, you know, and then we need to make sure they're not adulterated products, that they're coming from a good source. And then even if you have a good quality product, you're right, when you're prescribing things, you have to make sure, are they not on any medication that this could, you know, interact with?
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, do you combine that with Western medicine at all, too?
Oftentimes, yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not uncommon to. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So it depends on the severity of the condition. But, yeah, for many patients, I've done that. Like, a lot of times, like a patient with heart disease, you know, if they have advanced heart disease, usually those patients are going to be on pharmaceuticals to help control that. But then what I'll do is put them on herbals and then maybe design acupuncture therapy, or, you know, kind of targeted supplementation to support their cardiovascular system. So a lot of times you can use it as, so it has a synergistic effect. And that's a really nice way to be able to use these types of therapies. So they don't have to be sole therapies at all.
Mm-hmm. So do you find your practice going in a more holistic direction? Because I see you use Reiki on mm-hmm. patients
yeah.
and pets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you find you're moving more and more in that direction as opposed to the Western side of it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I do. I think it's hard. It's funny. You know, people, like, sometimes I'll run into colleagues or, you know, if there's students that I'm working with or whatever, you know, a lot of times they'll ask me, like, are you totally outside of the world of conventional medicine? And I'm like, no, it's not
yeah.
possible for me to be totally. I'm a vet. Like, I can't do that. You know, that
right.
will never go away. So, you know, but that's a good thing. I need to be able to have those skills so that I can assess what's appropriate and what's not. But as far as the things that I'm interested in putting, like, my time and effort and energy into, being able to offer services. Yeah, I think that it's kind of like falling down the rabbit hole when you start doing these types of things, because it's like, you know, acupuncture is like a gateway drug, you know, like you learn acupuncture yeah. and then you're like, wait, I got to learn more about this. And so
right.
then you study herbs and then it's like, man, okay, I got to learn more. And then you study food therapy and then you're like, oh, but I still need to do this. And so, but I personally, very much enjoy energy medicine. I mean, I believe that all health related issues stem from energetic imbalances. That's just my personal belief for myself and for my patients. Now, an owner doesn't have to believe that or understand that for me to work with them. But for me personally, I believe that. And so I think there is value in treating mind, body, and spirit for animals as well, because they have an emotional life. You know, I mean, we like to scrutinize that a lot. But I mean, you know, that plays a role in what happens with them as far as their health and well-being. So I think that I think it's something that is underutilized.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because I see by your website you do, again, Reiki, but you also do the tuning forks. I mean, have you done that with
yeah.
pets?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know last month my guest, she did it with humans.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
But you do it with pets
yeah,
and
uh-huh.
they respond.
Yeah. I do it with pets and people. Yeah, so I love sound therapy. I think it's amazing. And when I heard about using tuning forks as a method of acupuncture, I was like thrilled. So I started experimenting with it for myself. And the program that I've studied under is called Accutonics. And so this was a system that was developed by human acupuncturists. So I actually went through some of their training last year, and I find it very, very cool. And yes, I actually do that with people, but I do that with animals as well. And it's interesting. You'll find that, like, you'll find that certain species really tend to gravitate towards certain types of work. And so horses oftentimes really enjoy both energy work like Reiki. And then I also do what's called healing touch for animals. And they really enjoy that as well. And I found them to really enjoy the tuning forks. And funny enough, but cats, I have a cat, my own personal cat. I have two cats. And she is, you know, the quintessential skittish, you know, like, I don't like anything. Don't touch me. What do you want? What are you doing now?
Yeah,
you
know,
kind of, yes, kind of little whiny princess. And I one day was in my, I have a healing room in my house and I was working in there and just organizing some stuff. And I just thought, let's try this, you know? And so I activated the tuning forks and she was like, what is that? She started coming over. She was purring on him, rubbing on him. So I was like, all right, let's take it in a level, you know, let's go to the next level. So I activated them and then I, you know, put them on a few points for her and she loved it. Like she was so into it. So it's really funny. It's not for all animals. You know, if they're really sensitive about noise or if they're kind of weird about vibration or touch, they might not like it. So it's not something I necessarily recommend for everybody, but some animals really love those types of therapies. And so if they do, like I try to take advantage of it, you know, I mean, I think it's great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Again, real briefly, just to remind everybody, this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This show is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest this month, Dr. Eva Grosbeck. She is a licensed veterinarian who is certified in acupuncture and Chinese herbal medicine for pets. She also has a consultation practice and sees pet patients in the Tri-County area. Now, we've talked about pets for the whole show. What I want to know is, do you do some of this stuff on your self, or do you have others do it to you, acupuncture and what have you?
Yeah, absolutely. I've had a fair amount of acupuncture in my day. I wish I could do it more often. I'm oftentimes don't have as much time to commit to it as I would like to. But yeah, I absolutely do. So I do a lot of massage work. I get chiropractic done. I get acupuncture done. If I ever have an opportunity to get a tuning fork session or like an energy, any type of energy work like Reiki or healing touch. Yeah, I think all of that stuff is super important, especially if you're a practitioner. You know, I think that there's a lot of energy that's expended in doing this type of work, maybe more so than what might to the casual observer appear. And so, yeah, you know, when you're really invested in something and, you know, with this type of work, you work really closely with people. You know, I mean, I have patients that I see, you know, them and their owners more than my own family. You know, I see them every week for 90 minutes or something, you know, right, in some cases. And so, yeah, you know, it's a different type of situation. So, yeah, you really have to take care of yourself. And so I'm pretty open-minded to most therapies. So I'm kind of one of those people, like, I'll try anything once, you know, let's see. But
anything? That's
well, we draw the line
broad
somewhere.
Category, yeah, right. Right there, you know.
Well, healing modality.
Okay.
I've ventured into some that I didn't, you know, I tried cupping a few years back, which I really enjoyed. I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but it's a Chinese medical technique, but you know, they take these glass bottles, for lack of a better term, and light them on fire, and then, you know,
right, they leave the mark. And
because
I think Olympic athletes were using it recently.
Some of the swimmers,
right.
And maybe some other people.
Yeah,
and I was really happy to see that they were covering that in the press, because it's like, yeah, guess what? Like, you know, I have a physical therapist that I work with, and she was telling me how some of the people she studied under with were really into cupping, and they would, you know, do it at their house or whatever, you know, just light these things on fire. And but it's very therapeutic and relaxing, and I didn't think I'd ever try that, but you know, I was like, all right.
Pleasantly surprised.
I was pleasantly surprised. Yes.
Now, did you know at an early age you wanted to work with animals? Was that something, a desire of you that you had since you were a young girl?
Yes. Yeah. So it's one of those things that it's funny. I think for a lot of veterinarians it's like that. Yeah, you just kind of, I don't know, there's just like this, it's I don't know if it's in the genes. I don't know if it's something that happens to you early in your childhood or what. But yeah, I was like one of those kids. Like my first word was our cat's name. Like my mom would always tell me that story. You know, it wasn't like mom or dad. It was like the cat, you know,
really?
My version of the
okay.
cat's name.
Yeah.
You know, so it was like I was just like one of those kids that always wanted to be like, you know, if there were 10 people in a room and one dog, I would gravitate to the dog,
right.
you know? And so
right.
that's just my personality. Right. You know, I enjoy, you know, animals outside the scope of being a veterinarian or professionally. So I think that for me, just because there was that natural feeling, you know, as a kid, it kind of parlayed itself into, well, you know, so what's the way that I could, you know, be of most service to animals? Well,
right.
you know, it's kind of like a no-brainer at that point. So,
right.
yeah, and I think that's common for at least a lot of people, you know, that I've spoken to.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that just makes sense. But, you know, did you have a lot of pets as a kid growing up?
We did. Yeah, yeah. We did. Yeah, yeah. We were, I grew up in the type of family where, like, you know, my mom was very much like, we're going to keep everything. And my dad was like, we're not going to have any more pets. You know, but it was, you know,
mom won.
Right. Yeah. Well, it was with me, my sister, and my mom. So it was 3-1.
Oh,
so,
I see.
Didn't really have
democracy
much
democracy in action,
yeah,
right?
Exactly,
okay. There you
yeah,
go.
Exactly.
Poor dad got
right,
voted
yeah.
down, and oh well.
It was always the dog followed me home. Look what we found in a parking lot. This cat's
uh-huh.
outside and needs to be fed.
Right.
So yeah, yeah.
So dad was in the minority.
He was
and
in
that's
the
just too bad. Sorry.
Yes.
Nothing personal, but
right. Exactly.
We're getting another pet. Yeah. Well, you know. So, Eva, how can we get a hold of you if somebody wanted to get in touch with you,
mm-hmm.
you know, about their pet? How
yeah.
could they do so?
So typically, because I work alone, generally my preference is for people to reach out to me through my website. So it's www.healinghandsveterinaryacupunctureandwellness.com. It's kind of a long name. But if you go on there, there is a link that you can click on that says for new clients. And then you just fill out a form and it shoots an email right to me. And then I get back to people within, you know, 24 hours. And then once we've established communication, I know kind of what they're looking for, then I will contact them and then we can talk about, you know, scheduling a session and putting things together for their pet.
Mm-hmm. And now, do you go over to their house or do they come to yours or is there an
typically,
office?
Typically, yeah. So I've had all of that happen. Right now, typically, I'm doing most of the work in people's homes. I have an office in Ferndale that I've been doing some work out of. And then periodically, generally, I don't do this with new clients, but some of my established clients I have had, you know, do visits with at my home for convenience for them. So I'm pretty flexible as far as that goes. A lot of people like the home visits because, you know, a lot of the patients are older or they have mobility issues or other problems. So a lot of times that's a bonus for people not have to worry about getting them in and out of the car or, you know, having to kind of transport them. And then I'm also available to do consultation, like for people who are at a distance or maybe their pet doesn't need, you know, like a manual frequent thing like acupuncture or something, but maybe they just want to know about food therapy options for their pet, or maybe their pet has a diagnosed condition, but they want to try herbs or they want to try something else. So I can consult with people over distance too. I've also done that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So you must find your work very rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's emotional work, you know, so it's like anything, like I said, you know, you gotta, one of those things where you have to kind of take care of yourself as well. But yeah, absolutely. You know, because this is a different type of work. You know, you're assisting these patients through sometimes things that are very, you know, traumatic for people when their pets are paralyzed or, you know, when their pets are senior pets and, you know, that we're taking them out as far as they can go. And then when it's their time, it's their time. But I'm always involved with that with people. So, you know, yeah, there's a completely different level of presence. And, you know, when you're in general practice, you might see a patient, you know, 10, 12 times in their entire life, you know. But for me, I mean, when I work with patients, it's very oftentimes very closely. So it's not uncommon for me to, you know, see them weekly for a period of time and then every 2 weeks. And then, you know, if they're on maintenance, I might see them once a month. I might see them, you know, every other month or whatever. But there's always that checking in. So it's a different type of, it's a different type of relationship with the patients and with the families. And so, yeah, you know, I mean, it's, it allows a whole different level of, you know, communication with people, and you know, it's a different level of service.
Right. Well, the pet is a part of the family.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is something that is traumatic when they lose a pet. And sometimes, depending on the family, sometimes the pets get treated better than some of the humans in the family, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But
right.
That's just the way it works out. So I'm sure you've seen all that, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. I feel like I've seen it all at this point. But yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Eva Grosbeck, thank you very much for being on the show. Very interesting.
Good,
and
yeah.
I can sense your passion about pets and what it is you're doing. And I think you're moving in the right direction, because I think more and more Western medicine is being, you know, met with Eastern medicine.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's happening not only for pets, but for humans as well. So I think that you might be on the forefront here as you go forward. So thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. It's very enjoyable.
Thank you. And I'm back. I just want to thank my special guest for this month, Dr. Eva Grosbeck. She is a licensed veterinarian who is certified in acupuncture and Chinese herbal medicine for pets. She also has a consultation practice and sees pet patients in the Tri-County area. Very interesting interview. It's interesting to hear how she combines the Western medicine with the Eastern medicine and all those different modalities that she uses in treating pets. Not only does she do the acupuncture, but she does several other things as well, including the tuning forks and a lot of other things. Very interesting. And I think that's interesting that we are moving in a direction where I think more and more we're combining Western medicine with Eastern philosophy and medical practices. And I think that as we go further, that will help as we combine the two, helping both humans and animals as well. So once again, thank you to Dr. Eva Grosbeck for being on the show this particular month. I also want to thank my producer for this edition of Metaphysically Speaking, Mike Entman. Thank you very much. I always appreciate his help. Be sure to join me for another edition of Metaphysically Speaking on the third Tuesday of next month. Until then, thank you for listening. Have a great day, everybody.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
And dolls, you are at the malt shop with Daddy G. And we are going back to the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the malt shop. Where the jukebox is playing, the kids are dancing. And here we are, back in the 50s.
Ha! Ah, the mommy and the husky, the husky. Hey, rocking at the hospital hop. Hop in the hospital hop. Rocking at the hospital hop. Well, everybody hopping, everybody's bobbing, bobbing at the hospital hop. Come on, little baby, let's rock a little bit tonight.